okay, well, everybody knows what I'm going to say now, so I'll just go ahead and do it, and y'all can do it too. And it goes like this. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. As it turns out, this week we have a double portion. Not only that, it is the last of the two portions that make up the book of Vayikra, or Leviticus. So this week we'll finish the book, and it's quite a good finish as well. Anyway, the first portion begins, "And Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe, Bahar, Sinai." All right, Bahar means in, right? Bahar. Oh, Har is Mount. So in Mount Sinai. "And he said the following words." So here are the words in red that mark the beginning of the Parsha that's called Bahar, after the Mount. "Speak to the B'nai Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath unto Yahuwah." This is chapter 25, if I didn't say that. I must not have, so thank you for straightening me out. Yeah, chapter 25. And then we're going to end up with the next couple chapters. The double portion runs to chapter 27. So apologies there. "Speak unto the B'nai Israel, and when you come into the land," the land's going to keep a Sabbath. And we're going to see that this is, of course, a fairly famous parsha, because we're also going to hear a word that we've seen elsewhere, and that word is Jubilee, the Sabbath of Sabbaths. And a lot of things are going to hinge on these Sabbaths and rest for the land, as a matter of fact, in history, too. "6 years you'll plow your field, 6 years you shall prune your vineyard, and you'll gather in the produce of it. But in the 7th year is a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land. It's a Sabbath unto Yahuwah. You are neither to sow your field nor to prune your vineyard. Now that which grows of itself of your harvest, you shall not reap. The grapes of your undressed vine you shall not gather. It is a year of solemn rest for the land." And one other thing, I'll make this point here. You'll heard this term, the Shemitah year, or the 7th year. That's a root word from those names for the numbers that we practice. But there's another element of this that I've always thought was kind of fascinating. It has to do with trust, right? Because you're going to essentially say, going to do all this work, going to harvest and plant for 6 years. 7th year, not. What are we going to eat in the 7th year? Answer, better have some trust. "The Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, for you and your servant, your maidservant, your manservant, your hired servant, and for the settler by your side that sojourns with you, and for your cattle, for all the beasts that are in your land, and all the increase thereof shall be for food. And you'll number 7 Sabbaths of years unto yourself," 7 times 7 years, "and that will be unto you, there'll be unto you these days of 7 Sabbaths of years, 49 years in total. Then you shall make a proclamation with a teruah." There's that word again. We do the teruah, the blast of the shofar, the horn, "on the 10th day of the 7th month." 10th day of the 7th. Oh yeah, that's the Day of Atonement. "On that day, you shall make a proclamation with the horn throughout all your land." Now, this next verse, I hope, will sound familiar. It doesn't to modern-day school kids, because they don't know anything about liberty anymore, and it's not one of the things that seems to be taught, because the intent is to expunge it. But back in Philadelphia, there was this thing called the Liberty Bell. This verse is the verse that was inscribed on the Liberty Bell. You'll recognize it when we get there. "You shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." There it is. This is the verse that appeared back when we had liberty. Makes sense, doesn't it? "Proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. This is a Yovel year." So that's the Hebrew word. The English turns it into Jubilee. And of course, out of the word Yovel and Jubilee comes all kinds of things that are established on this idea of Jubilee. And it's a big deal. "This is a time when every man will return unto his own possession, and you shall return every man unto his family. The Yovel year, the Jubilee, shall that 50th year be unto you. You shall not sow, nor reap that which grows of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in off the undressed vines. For it is a Yovel, a Jubilee. It is to be set apart wholly unto you. You shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. In this year of Yovel, Jubilee, you shall return every man unto his possession. And if you sell anything to your neighbor..." Now, this is another principle. It's going to be outlined over the next few verses. In In economics nowadays, we call it discounting, or essentially a linear regression. We'll come back to that. But basically, you're going to take, what we're going to see is, you're going to take a look at how many years remain and essentially divide it up and then discount or count back the number of years and proportionally adjust all the things that are going to happen as a result of this. So here you go. If you sell anything to your neighbor or you buy of your neighbor's hand, you're not to wrong one another. According to the number of years after the yovel shall you buy of your neighbor, and according to the number of years of the crops he shall sell unto you. In other words, depending upon how many years you got from the last yovel or jubilee till the next one, that's how many years you're basically buying when you transfer a land, because essentially at the end of this time, remember, it's going to go back where it started from. So it's not in perpetuity, it's going to be for a fixed period of years. And the price is adjusted based on how many years there are to go. According to the multitude of years, you shall increase the price. And according to the fewness of years, you shall diminish the price. So yes, it's the mathematician would say it's a linear adjustment. For the number of crops that he sells to you, you shall not wrong one another, but you shall fear your Elohim, for ani Yahuwah Elohechem. Right? I am Yahuwah, your El. Therefore, you shall do my statutes, hukati, and keep my ordinances, mishpati, and do them, and then you shall dwell in the land in safety. And the land shall yield her fruit, and you shall eat until you have enough, and you'll dwell therein in safety. And if you end up saying things like the following, well, what are we going to eat in that seventh year? Behold, you may not sow or gather in the increase. Well, then he says, and listen to this, this is the trust thing again, I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it'll bring forth enough produce for the next, not one, not two, 3 years. And if you think about it, you'll see why that makes sense. You shall sow in the eighth year and eat the produce, the old store, but it's going to take until the ninth year, right? Till the crops grow up, until her produce comes in. So during that time, you eat the old store. So year six, going to be a big deal. The land shall not be sold in perpetuity. This we kind of knew, but now we're going to get a repetition just so it's very clear. Because the land is mine. You are strangers and settlers with me. And in all the land of your possession, you shall grant a redemption for the land. If your brother is waxed poor, he sells some of his stuff, then his kinsman, the one that's next to him, shall come and shall redeem that which his brother has sold. We're going to see this principle throughout Scripture, of course, famously in the book of Ruth. If a man has no one to redeem it, he's waxen rich, and he has sufficient means to redeem it himself, well, then he can count the number of years of the sale thereof and restore the surplus, the overplus, unto the man to whom he sold it. And then he returns unto his possession. But if he doesn't have sufficient means to get it back for himself, that which he has sold shall remain in the hand of the one that has bought it up until the Yovel year, the year of Jubilee. And in the Jubilee it shall go out, and he shall return unto his possession. So remember, it's not a sale in perpetuity. It's a discounted sale based on a linear account of the number of years that remain, each of which will have a crop. Now, if a man sells a dwelling place or a house, in other words, in a walled cities, we're going to see, are different than out in the country. In a walled city, he can redeem it within a whole year after it is sold. For a full year, he shall have the right of redemption. So during that first year, he can say, hey, I've changed my mind, I want it back. But if he doesn't redeem it within the space of a full year, the house that is in the walled city shall remain in perpetuity. It'll be made sure, in other words, to the fellow that bought it throughout his generations. It does not go out in the Jubilee. So land that's out there that's capable of producing crops, it returns in the Yovel year. Not so for houses in walled cities. Now, the houses, though, of the villages, which have no wall round about them, they are reckoned to go with the fields of the country. They may be redeemed. They do go out in the Jubilee. But as for the cities of the Levites, the houses of the cities of their possession, the Levites have a perpetual right of redemption. These are their cities. Now, if a man purchases of the Levites, then the house that was sold in the city of his possession shall go out in the Jubilee, for the houses of the cities of the Levites are their possession among the Benai Israel. Now, if your brother, if he's waxen poor, his means fail with you, then you shall uphold him. As a stranger and a settler, he will live with you. Take no interest of him, no increase. But fear your El, that your brother may live with you. Don't charge him interest for the time that he's going to live with you. You shall not give him your money, your silver, literally upon interest. Remember, money, silver in the Hebrew are the same word because they are the same. Well, back when we had honest weights and measures, that was clear. Nowadays, you have to explain that to people because they haven't got any idea of what real money is. Most of them have never seen it. You do not lend him your silver upon interest, nor give him your victuals for increase. So you feed him, and that's it. Ani Yahuwah your El, who in fact brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan to be your El. Now, if your brother's waxen poor with you, and he sells himself unto you, you shall not make him serve as a bondservant, as a hired servant, as a settler. He shall be with you. He shall serve with you until the year of Jubilee. Then he goes out from you, he and his children with him, and he shall return unto his own family, and unto the possession of his fathers he shall return. Now, notice this is, again, this is not the same as the rules we'll talk about, or we've already talked about them in the case of Exodus chapter 21, for bondservants. Because it says, they are my servants, of whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as bondmen. You shall not rule over him with rigor, but in fact you shall fear Yahuwah your El. Now as for your bondmen and your bondmaids, those whom you may have of the nations that are around about you, of them you shall buy bondmen and bondmaids. So of those other nations, you can actually have bond servants. You're going to treat them well, remember. This is not the same as chattel slavery or even tax slavery like we see in the United States where you can go anywhere in the world, but Big Brother's still got a hook in you. Moreover, the children of the strangers that sojourn among you, of them you can buy, and of their families that are with you, which they've begotten in your land, they too might be able to be your possession if they sell themselves into bond service. And you may make them an inheritance for your children after you to hold for possession. Of them you may take your bondmen forever. But over your brethren, the B'nai Israel, you shall not rule over one another with rigor. So there is a difference here in the understanding between the brethren and those who are bond servants of other nations. Now if a stranger who is a settler with you, he gets rich, he's waxen rich, and his brother, that's your brother in this case, is waxen poor beside him, and he sells himself unto the stranger who's a settler with you, or the offshoot of a stranger's family, after he is sold, he may be redeemed. So one of his brethren may redeem him. Or, now we're going to see that near kin is going to have some definition here, or his uncle's son may redeem him, or any that are nigh of kin unto him of his family may redeem him. Or if he's waxen rich, well, he can do it himself. And you shall reckon with him that bought him from the year that he sold himself to that fellow unto the year of Jubilee. So the same kind of a thing we're going to see. The price for redemption is going to be based on a discount of the number of years that we have up until the next time when he would be free anyway. According to the time of a hired servant, shall he be with him. If there be a lot of years left, according to them, he shall give back the price of his redemption out of the money that he was bought for. And if there remain just a few years under that year of Jubilee, well, then you reckon with him. According unto his years, he shall give back the price of his redemption. So it's cheaper to redeem somebody a year or two away from the Jubilee than it is when there's a lot more time left. As a hired servant, year by year, he shall be with him. He shall not rule with rigor over him in your sight. Now, this is kind of an interesting one, too. There's a Rashi comment on this that I've always thought was kind of fascinating. He shall not rule with rigor over him in your sight. So, what is that saying? Well, if you see it, then what? Well, as Rashi puts it, if you see it, now you have a duty to say something, to intervene. He is not to be ruled over with rigor. You see it, you had better, because you've seen it. Understand, there's an action required. And if he's not redeemed by any of these means, then he shall go out in the year of Jubilee, he and his children with him. That too, remember, is a difference with the other kinds of bond servitude we see in Exodus. For unto me, the B'nai Israel are servants. They are my servants, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt, Ani Yahuwah Elohekim. So this is the difference. He has already redeemed us, and we are his, and that's a big deal. Chapter 26, and we're almost finished with the first of the two here. This is the almost end of Behar in the Mount. It says this, you shall make for yourself no idols, nor shall you rear up a graven image or a pillar, nor shall you place a figured stone in your land to bow down to it, for Ani Yahuwah Elohekim. And then this is interesting. Final verse in this parsha says, "You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary." And that is Mikdash. It's actually Mikdashi, mine. Ani Yahuwah. All right, from there, we will continue to the final parsha in the book of Vayikra, or Leviticus, and it says this. First word is im. We know that Hebrew word means if, and that's an important word because usually what it means, there's a logical conditional going on here, and here we go. If behukotai, okay, there is in fact the first unique word, behukotai, if you walk in in my statutes, and keep my commandments. If you walk in my statutes, it's actually if in my statutes you walk, then and do them, then I will give you. Here come a lot of really good things that we're going to see. This is another set of blessings and cursings. There's a famous set at the end of Deuteronomy, chapters 28 and 29. But this is essentially the ones that are in Leviticus. And in some respects, they might even be scarier. They're not as voluminous, but they certainly are worthy of note. Here we go. So here's the good stuff. If you, bechukotai, if in my statutes you walk, then will I give you rains in their season, and the land shall yield her produce, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And your threshing floor, well, it'll reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and you shall eat bread until you have enough, and dwell in your land safely. So a lot of good stuff. Basically, land's going to bring forth an abundance. You got no sweat. Plenty of crops and things to make it through the year. It's all wonderful. You'll dwell in the land safely. And here we go. And I will give you shalom in the land. And you'll lie down and no one will make you afraid. I'll cause the evil beast to cease out of the land. Neither shall the sword go through your land. No sword shall go through your land. Now, that's a metaphor, right, for no invading armies and that kind of stuff. But it's kind of interesting because there is a verse that follows that, and this kind of yields a Rashi comment I always thought was, worthy of note at any rate. It says this, "And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword." Interesting. Now, let's think about that a second, because he's just finished saying, no evil beast, got no sweat there, you're going to lie down in peace, no one's going to make you afraid, nor will the sword go through your land. So, you're going to chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. How does that happen? Well, Rashi has an interesting comment. He says, essentially, we call it friendly fire. They dare to do something like this during this time when you guys were walking in obedience, they're going to kill one another. It'll be friendly fire that takes them out. You don't have to do anything. You'll chase them, and they simply fall before you by the sword. One other note here, as I like to point out, there are two phrases that are used in the Hebrew, and this kind of gives us a clue, too, as to how this has happened. One is lefi cherev. Lefi, that's literally by the mouth of the sword. The sword has a mouth, if you think about it, it devours. But in this case, by the sword is just le cherev. Le cherev, by the sword. As opposed to by the mouth of the sword. And essentially, the way this is explained, this is pretty consistent throughout Scripture. When Israel does something, and it is those pagans that are devoured, if you will, by the mouth of the sword, it's by lefi cherev. But in the case of where there are pagans involved and whacking one another or something, it is just by the sword, le cherev. Here we go. This is a relatively famous summary of how lopsided this thing would be. 5 of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies shall fall before you, again, le cherev, by the sword. I, meanwhile, says Yahuwah, I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and will establish my covenant, briti, with you. And you shall eat the old store long kept. In other words, you'll have plenty of stuff. It'll keep. You won't have any sweat, nothing to worry about. What you've got will last. And you shall bring forth the old from before the new. So you got all this old stuff. You eat that up, then there'll be plenty of new. And I will set my tabernacle, my mikdash, among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And I will walk among you, and will be your Elohim, and you shall be my people. And Ani Yahuwah Elohekim, he says. We know this. It's the signature line. And this is also something we often see with it. Who brought you forth out of the land of Mitzrayim, that you should not be their bondmen. And I have broken the bars of your yoke, and made you go upright. So, yeah, essentially declare liberty throughout the land. You are my bondsman, and that's a good thing. You're not bondsman of anybody else. You're not to be the bondsman of the land of Mitzrayim. I have broken the bars of your yoke. Now, the parsha begins with im, if. And then we see this, and it's rendered as but in the English, but it's also kind of like, on the other hand, if, right? In computer programming, some languages, you'll see it written else if. In other words, on the other hand, but if not, okay? So we got if and not if. But if you will not hearken unto me, lo, hearken, and it's lo shema, of course, right? Shema means hear and obey. So if you will lo shema and will not do all of these commandments, note that word there too, lo is not, and all is kol. Et kol ha mitzvot. Et kol. In other words, what are we supposed to do? Et, the pointer, all of the mitzvot, the commandments that I command you. If you reject my statutes, and if your soul abhors my ordinances, and by the way, I got to stop here because I've had some discussions over the last week with what I would call some prime representatives of the whore church, whore ex-Christianity, that says, oh, under the law. We're not under the law. All that old law stuff was done away with, nailed to the cross by Jesus, by the way, who said he wasn't going to do exactly that. So I think right off the top, if we read the book, we know we're talking about another Jesus whom we have not preached. And what they don't understand is there is a difference between the laws of men and Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh and his instruction, which he said he wasn't doing away with. What they do is they fail to recognize there's a difference. And here is how he puts it, and I think this is important, because this is exactly what we have the whore church doing. Remember, Romans 13 says, when Big Brother jumps, this is, by the way, the government-inspired version, it's not what it actually says, but this is what the whore church will tell you, because who are they serving? It says, when Big Brother says jump, you say, how high? I'm a good little slave of the Almighty. I don't know the difference between his commandments and men's commandments and traditions, or nomos of any fake gods. Back to what he says, and read this, and with that on the table, I think this ought to leap off the page at us. But if you shall reject my statutes, the ones that I said would stand forever throughout your generations and all your dwelling places, not going to change them, yeah, as long as heaven and earth exist, my statutes, be huchotai, and if your soul abhors mishpati, my ordinances, so that you will not do all kol of my commandments, but in fact, and then you break briti, my covenant, well, here's what I'm going to do to you. And listen to this and ask yourself, does this apply? I will appoint terror over you. Ooh, the Biden Fuhrer is going to help with that. I will appoint terror over you, even consumption and fever that'll make the eyes fail, the soul languish. You will sow your seed in vain, for your enemies will eat it. Matter of fact, they'll be coming across the border like locusts, eating your crops and driving you out of your homes, taking your Obama and Biden phones and destroying your sons and daughters' inheritance. Think about it, folks. If, as I go through this, ask yourself what is going on today, and given that the whore church has literally done all of this, they object, they abhor his ordinances, reject his statutes, and tell you, you're not even supposed to do it. How dare you say that we are supposed to do kol, all the things that he says? Well, we don't have to. It's just if you want to be blessed that you should. I will appoint terror over you, consumption, fever, eyes fail, soul languish. Your soul, you'll sow your seed in vain, and your enemies will eat it. And listen, and I will set my face against you, and you shall be smitten before your enemies. And see if this doesn't just leap off the page. They that hate you shall rule over you. You domestic extremist, transphobe, homophobe, LGBTQ-ophobe, white supremacist. You know, you don't even have to be white, but if you know how to do math or like indoor plumbing, you're a white supremacist now. Those that hate you, how do you know they hate you? They want to poison poke you. They want to cut off your kids' genitalia. They want to teach them bad things. They hate your God. They don't want you to have fossil fuels or the ability to travel or to even feed yourself. Those that hate you, it says, shall rule over you. I look at this and I go, QED, done. You shall flee when no one pursues you. But wait, as they used to say back in the old days when some of us were growing up, Don Pardo, tell them what they've won. Right? Remember the announcer? If you will not for all of this stuff, if you still won't hearken to me, well, Don Pardo, tell them what they win. I'll chase you seven times more. For your sins, your rebellion, your chatat techem, okay? In other words, y'all's chatat, your sins, your rebellion to me. This, by the way, is the first of several, matter of fact, four, seven times seven times seven times sevens that we're going to see in this set of curses. So it starts with what we've already got. Those that hate you shall rule over you. And then see if this doesn't now kind of leap off the page. I will break the pride of your power. Now let's pause there. Break the pride of your power. Okay, so maybe your military won't defend your borders. Maybe they'll go die overseas. Maybe your military will be gutted from within. Your army, your navy, your air force, your pilots, all of those people will be stricken with the Zyklon B injections so that when they need to, they can't even arm or pilot the machines, and their immune systems are destroyed. How about if you become a laughingstock for the world because your currency is fixing to default, and they will say, oh, the full faith and credit of the United States. How dare anybody suggest that it's not wonderful? Wait a minute. You got a senile cretin on the payroll, and that was out this week too, of the Communist Chinese. You don't think that's an embarrassment, a default? A dereliction of duty, literally a shame on the international front. I will break the pride of your power. I'm going to say, well, done. What else is new? And I'll make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. Now, if you think about that, and iron and brass were materials that they knew back then, this was before they understood as much about heavy metals, for example. We've got all kinds of things being sprayed from planes that are essentially heavy metals out of the sky, and drought and manipulation of weather and polluting the ground, destroying the ability of it to raise crops. I'll make your heaven as iron, your earth as brass. Your strength will be spent in vain because your land will not yield her produce, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. And still, it says, if you will walk contrary or hostile to me. Now, this is an interesting word. This is keri in the Hebrew, keri. And this word, this is the first time this word appears in the entire Bible, in Torah. And interestingly, these uses in this set of curses are the only times that it appears. It appears seven times, walk hostile or contrary to me, in this one section, and that's basically it. So if you carry, if you walk contrary to me, and you will not hearken, Shamar, here, and obey me, well, hey, this is the second of the seven times seven. I'll bring seven times more, again, more plagues upon you, according to what? Your chatat techem, your y'all's sin. That's the plural form of the sinning in plural, y'all. And I will send the beast of the field among you, which will rob you of your children and destroy your cattle and make you few in number, and your ways shall become desolate. Beasts of the field. Huh. It's interesting that term is used. I used the expression about the locusts coming across from the southern border by the tens of thousands, and that is accelerating to the point where it might be tens of millions. Your ways shall become desolate. But wait, there's more. If in spite of these things you will still not be corrected unto me, but you continue to carry, walk contrary unto me, well, you know what? Then I will carry, I will walk contrary unto you. And I'll smite you, even I, seven times for your sins. Y'all's sins, plural, again. And I will bring a sword, a cherev, upon you that shall execute the vengeance of the covenant. And you shall be gathered together within your cities. Well, that's exactly what they want to do. That's exactly what Big Brother got. 15-minute city's going to stack you in there like cordwood. Take away your stuff. You won't have any electric cars because you're not going to have electricity. Can you see this? I'm going to stack you together in those 15-minute cities. I'll send the pestilence among you. Hey, how much easier it is when you're all cramped in there and they can make sure that you take your Zyklon B and anything that runs through you, as Patton once famously said, will come through you like crap through a goose. You shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy. That's the whole point of the sticking them into the cities like cordwood. When I break your staff of bread, 10 women will bake your bread in one oven. And they'll deliver your bread by weight. Now, this is fascinating. They'll deliver your bread by weight. You'll eat, and you'll not be satisfied. I have suggested for several years, we've already seen this starting to happen, but wait, we probably haven't seen anything yet. What are they doing? Well, they're modifying the food. We've got glyphosate crap. We've got frankenfoods, corn that isn't corn, wheat that's rapidly becoming not wheat, soybeans and other things that were making little soy boys before. Now it's a little soy. They don't know what they are. So ultimately what's happened is food value has been destroyed. This is saying there's going to be plenty of weight, but you'll eat and not be satisfied. You won't be nourished. Sounds, again, exactly like what we're already seeing. And for all of this, you knew it was coming, didn't you? If you still will not hearken to me, hear and obey, but walk unto me, well then, I will walk kerih unto you. This time it says, in fury. In fury, be-chamat. And I will also chastise you 7 times for your sin. All right, 7 times 7. How much worse is it going to get? Listen to this and say, wait a second, we're here too, aren't we? Only I suspect it's going to get 7 times worse than it already is. It's just that we've already seen this. You shall eat the flesh of your sons and the flesh of your daughters. You shall eat. It's not enough Planned Parenthood's harvesting their little baby organs and parts and sending them off to Fauci's labs and to the communist Chinese to do bioweapons research and all kinds of wonderful things about how to kill people more effectively and so forth and make bioflavonoids and flavor enhancers for your poison drinks and everything else. I will also chastise you 7 times. You'll eat the flesh of your sons and your daughters. And I will destroy your high places. Cut down your sun pillars and cast your carcasses upon the carcasses of those idols of yours. And my soul shall abhor you. And I'll make those 15-minute cities, I'll make your cities a waste. Wait a minute. I got to ask this question. If he made San Francisco, Chicago, Los Angeles, or New York in a waste, would anybody notice? I'll make your cities a waste, and I'll bring your sanctuaries into desolation, and I will not smell the savor of your sweet odors. Wait a second, you can't smell them in San Francisco over the crap that's in the streets, right? If you think about it, folks, I guess what I'm suggesting is 7 times 7, there's already a lot of indication that essentially everything he has promised here has already come to pass, and guess what? For good reason. The reasons I started off with, because the whore church has already said, we hate his commandments. They're done away with. I'm not under the law. Now, isn't it funny? The people that will tell you, I'm not under the law, are the most damned, and I mean that in the literal sense, slaves under the law of men that you've ever seen. These are people, there's a line I love that says, let those who falsely believe they are free rattle their chains. They're debt slaves. Their kids can be taken from them for a minor transgression. They don't have the right to freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of worship, free to be free of illegal search and seizure. For crying out loud, they can't keep and bear arms, not in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, or any place where Big Brother says, you slaves, you can't have stuff, you can't even eat decent food. And you dare to go out of your homes without your mask, you little slave you, your face diapers? We are seeing a level of tyranny, folks, that literally is unmatched in human history. Unmatched in human history. I don't think the people that chafed under Roman rule during the time of Yeshua were anywhere close to as enslaved as the average American during the last few years of the COVID lockdowns was, and didn't even realize how bad they... Oh, and guess what? It ain't over yet. And if you think it is, just pay attention. I'll make your cities a waste. I won't smell the odor of your sweet savors over the stench. And furthermore, here we go. I will bring the land into desolation. And your enemies that dwell therein shall be astonished at it. They'll be coming over the Rio Grande by the tens of thousands, but eventually they'll be astonished when they find themselves distributed all over the place. And look, look at all the feces, the needles, and even the infrastructure that's been destroyed. I guess the Biden Fuhrer got it done before we even got here. What does he say? I will scatter you among the nations, and I'll draw out the sword after you, and your land shall be a desolation, and your cities shall be a waste. Now, this is the point where I point out, this is one of those things that I've always thought was kind of fascinating. There's a line I like to quote in this context from Mark Twain, famously. He said, you know, history doesn't repeat exactly, but it rhymes. Okay, as an engineer, I have noted for years that every solution to all of the equations of motion and electricity and orbits of planets and just about everything, including human society, if you look at the math, you'll find that it is what's called underdamped or undamped exponentials, which resolve mathematically into sinusoids. In other words, folks, things oscillate. They move back and forth like a pendulum or like a shock absorber or cycles up and down. We see it in economics everywhere. We literally see that this is the way it's done. Well, history, too, moves in cycles. And guess what? So does prophecy. That which has been done is that which shall be done. And literally, says Solomon, there ain't nothing new under the sun. Here we go. And cycles repeat. And they don't necessarily repeat precisely, but they rhyme. In other words, sometimes you get bigger cycles, cycles of cycles, wheels within wheels, and here we are. I will suggest, in other words, that this part has already been fulfilled. We've already seen it. Here we are, still scattered. Northern kingdom, southern kingdom. The great diaspora, the scattering that was prophesied for rebellion has happened. We're still in exile. And guess what? Do you think just because we're scattered that we can't be kicked out of yet another land, like America or like Europe or other places for cause? History repeats, prophecy repeats, the same causes result in the same remedies, the same curses. I will scatter you among the nations, and I'll draw out the sword after you, and your land shall be a desolation, and your cities shall be a waste. Now, here is something that we've seen with respect to the land. The question is it done yet? Does it apply? Certainly some of the things, the Sabbath for the land, seems to apply explicitly, specifically in the land. But a lot of the other elements, at least, of the covenant, again, they may not follow exactly, but I suggest they rhyme. Then he says, the land shall be paid her Sabbath. As long as it lies desolate and you're in your enemy's land, even then shall the land rest and repay her Sabbaths. And law, as long as it lies desolate, it shall have rest, even the rest which it didn't have, not in your Sabbaths, when you dwelt upon it. Now as for them that are left of you, I will send a faintness into their heart, in the lands of their enemies. And at the sound of a driven leaf, that'll chase them, and they'll flee, as one flees from the sword, and they shall fall when no one pursues. And they shall stumble one upon another, as it were before the sword when no one pursues, and you shall have no power to stand before your enemies. Doesn't that kind of explain a lot of what you see going on today? People literally cowering before their enemies. I marveled at the level of cowardice by elected officials, by so-called law enforcement, and by the peons, the serfs, the dumbed-down idiots who put on their little masks and drove alone in a car, or rode a bike along a deserted highway with their stupid face diaper rebreathers on because, what? They had no power to stand before their enemies who treated them like dumbed-down slaves that they were, and they didn't even bother to speak up. They couldn't speak through their stupid masks. And you shall perish among the nations in the land of your enemies, and it shall eat you up. And they that are left of you shall pine away in their torahlessness, in their iniquity, in their enemies' lands. And also in the torahlessness, the iniquities of their fathers, shall they pine away with them. Now this, remember cycles? We get a positive cycle, a negative cycle. Listen to this. And they shall confess their torahlessness, their iniquity, and the torahlessness or iniquity of their fathers, and in their treachery which they committed against me, and also that they walked, what? Bakery, in contrariness, in hostility unto me. I will also walk bakery unto them, and bring them into the land of their enemies. If then, perchance, their uncircumcised heart is eventually humbled, and they then be paid the punishment of their torahlessness, then what? Now, this is fascinating, and I, as you know, like to look at things like bookends and open brackets and closed brackets. We see references over and over again. I will remember the promises to what? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There's something unique about this next verse. Listen carefully. And then he says, well, I remember my covenant, Briti, with Yaakov, and also my covenant with Yitzhak, and also my covenant with Abraham will I remember, Zakar, and I will remember the land. Now, okay, that's backwards, right? It's backwards from what we normally hear. Now, so the question, and it's been asked over the centuries, why? Why are they backwards? You will hear the answer from the sages, the scholars that have looked at this for years, and they'll say, oh, this is cumulative merit. Now, I'm not discounting or saying I don't think that they don't have a point here. I'm going to suggest, though, that at least to me it seems like there could be something else going on. I'll get that in a second. But they will say it's backwards because, you know, it's cumulative merit. Jacob, and then Isaac, and then Abraham. Abraham is the father of all. So the cumulative merit. Okay, fine. What else? Why is it interesting? To me, because this looks like a closed set of brackets. We've had the open brackets, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now we're seeing what looks like the reverse. Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham. Almost like he's saying, I will remember, I will put a close, a period here at the end of this sentence, a close bracket at the end of this open question of rebellion and punishment for rebellion when the debt is paid. That's what he just finished saying, right? Here we go. For the land shall lie forsaken without them, and shall be paid her Sabbaths, while she lies desolate without them. And they shall be paid the punishment of their torahlessness, because... Even because, why? They rejected my ordinances, and their soul abhorred hukati, my statutes. And yet for all of that, when they're in the land of their enemies, listen to this, I still, he says, won't reject them. Neither will I abhor them to destroy them utterly. Now he's just finished saying, I'm going to walk contrary to you, and he has been. There are references in Scripture that I have pointed out, and so does, the Bible makes them real clear. Hide my face from them. A lot of folks would say he's been hiding his face for a long time now. Centuries even. Why have we not seen the open miracles? Why is there no power in the whore church and so forth? His face seems to have been hidden. And yet for all of that, even when they're in the land of their enemies, I will not reject them, nor will I abhor them to destroy them utterly, he says, and to break my covenant with them for Ani Yahuwah Elohim. There's the signature line. Now, what's interesting to me about this is, he says, not to destroy them utterly and to break Briti, my covenant, with them. Now, I hear the whore church, you've probably heard this too, say, oh, that old covenant, done away with. Oh, done away with. I will contend that the creator of the universe, we got one thing going for us. His promises, his covenant. We break them, he keeps them. All of them. Period. End of story. If he didn't, hell in the handbasket would look a lot better than the problems we would have if he did not keep his covenants in spite of our torahlessness, our iniquity. As a matter of fact, for those that argue, it's all done away with, nailed to the cross because Jesus did away with it, well, that's another Jesus who said he wasn't going to change one jot or tittle. What does this say? I'm not about to break my covenant with them, because for Ani Yahuwah Elohim, and for their sakes, will I remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought forth out of the land of Mitzrayim in the sight of the nations, that I might be their El, Ani Yahuwah. I might be Elohim to them. He keeps his, praise Yah, that he keeps his covenants. For their sakes, I will zakar, remember the covenant of their ancestors. All of the covenants. All of the promises. There's an element here, and there are a number of pieces coming together. That's why I like this idea of these reverse brackets. My covenant, I'll remember zakar, my covenant. The new covenant, the one, that's not what he's talking about here. He says, my covenant, remember the one that I made with Jacob, with Isaac, and with Abraham. And there were nested covenants. This is the reverse direction. The first one, the Abrahamic covenant, was the one that is, what? At the end of the set of brackets. That's the covenant we're talking about. By the way, I will suggest that is the one that he says is renewed. Brit Chadashah in Jeremiah 31:31 and the like. How do we know it's not completely in place yet or completely over? The closed brackets haven't happened because he said it'll no longer be necessary for everyone to teach their neighbor, saying, know Yahuwah. They don't even know his name, folks. They don't even know his name isn't the Lord. Know Yahuwah because they'll all know that me, from the least of them to the greatest of them. Has that happened? Come on, you'd have to be a fool to think that that has already happened. The closed brackets haven't been closed yet. It's a covenant he is remembering. For their sakes will I remember, Zakar, the covenant of their ancestors, the ones that I brought forth out of the land of Mitzrayim, the sight of the nations, that I might be their El. Do you have any doubt about which covenant he's talking about here? Ani Yahuwah. And again, I'll say all of them. But it was, yes, a.k.a. the Sinai covenant, but before that, what's he talking about? Why is it he didn't destroy them and start over with Moshe? Same reason. Because the covenant that I made, starting with Abraham, and with Isaac, and with Yaakov, he's remembering that. He has been keeping faithfully to it, even though we've broken it since, literally, since before any of us were even around. The last chapter, the last verse in chapter 26 says, these are Ha-Hukim, the statutes, Ve Ha-Mishpatim, the ordinances, Ve Ha-Torot, Torot, oh. No, not the laws, that's what the English learning says. Torot, folks, is the instructions, all of them. Remember, Torot, instructions, that's bigger than laws. How do we know? Well, it includes precedents, stories that tell us how the instructions, the statutes, judgments, and commandments are to work. Even things like parables, that's all Torot. These are the statutes and the ordinances and the Torot which he, Yahuwah, made between him and the B'nai Yisrael in Har Sinai, Behar Sinai, by the hand of Moshe. That was the end of chapter 26. These are the statutes and the ordinances and the Torot, plural, of instructions, which Yahuwah made between himself and the B'nai Israel, Behar Sinai, by the hand of Moshe. And then it says, chapter 27. Now, this is the last chapter in the book of Leviticus, or Vayikra, and it's kind of interesting, and yet this one is probably one of the more, I guess you'd say, obscure in a lot of respects, and one of those things that people tend to kind of scratch their heads about. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, speak unto the B'nai Israel, say to them, when a man shall clearly utter a vow, and that word is singular there, of persons unto Yahuwah, according to your valuation. So the vow here is a nadir, and it is, well, it's something that's kind of difficult to wrap our heads around. I've got a note in my margins on this score. There is going to be a valuation. It is the Kohen that's going to do the valuation. Your valuation shall be according to the following. So we're going to see a list of several things. For a male, ages 20 up to 60, your valuation will be 50 shekels of silver. That's a pretty hefty valuation after the shekel of the sanctuary. Now, if it's female, then the valuation is 30 shekels. Younger ones from 5 years old unto 20 years old, then the valuation for a male, 20 shekels. For a female, 10 shekels. And without... So he simply says that the valuation is the following. Now, a lot of people can get very upset. Well, why are they different between males and females? Answer, because he's the creator. He writes the rules. But one of the explanations possibly is that when you're talking about work, that the young male has the potential to do more work probably than the young female, although there are certainly other things that would mitigate and would argue in another direction. So I don't know ultimately. But we're going to get a listing. If it's a month old up to 5 years old, then the valuation for a male, 5 shekels. For the female, 3 shekels. And from 60 years old and up, if it's a male, the valuation is 15 shekels, female, 10 shekels. Now, if he's too poor for your valuation, then he shall be set before the priest, and the Kohen, the priest, shall value him according to the means of him that vowed. Shall the priest value him? So maybe this is part of the reason why Yeshua says, you know, maybe you better just not keep your mouth shut, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't necessarily make these vows. Now, if it's a beast, an animal, whereof men make an offering unto Yahuwah, so if it's something like a goat or a sheep or an ox or whatever, if it's an offering of the kind that men, a beast of the kind that men make an offering, all that any man gives of such unto Yahuwah shall be set apart, kadosh. He doesn't change it, alter it, a good for a bad or a bad for a good, and if he shall at all try to change it, beast for beast, then both it and that which it is changed shall be set apart. So once this vow is made, it's to be set apart. Now, if they bring an unclean beast, the kind of which they may not bring an offering before Yahuwah, then the beast shall be set before the priest. So, examples, right? A camel would be one. How about a dog? An offering is not made of dogs, but somebody could offer an unclean beast. It is to be set before the Kohen. The priest values it, whether it's good or bad. As a priest values it, so shall it be. But if the person would indeed redeem it, then he shall add a fifth part unto the valuation. So the idea here is, this is like what we see for other things, right? Where there is an unintentional taking of something. You add a fifth part to it. And when a man shall sanctify his house to be set apart unto Yahuwah, then the priest shall value it, whether it's good or bad, and the priest shall value it, and that is what it shall be. That's what stands. And if he that sanctified it would redeem his house, then also to that, he adds a fifth part of the silver of the valuation unto it, and it shall be his. So he can redeem it. He has to not only pay back the valuation of the Kohen, but add a fifth to it. Now, if a man shall sanctify unto Yahuwah part of his field, a field of his possession, then the valuation shall be according to the sowing thereof. In other words, how big of a field? What kind of crops can it produce? The sowing of an omer of barley shall be valued at 50 shekels of silver. And if he sanctifies his field from the year of Yovel, Jubilee, according to your valuation, it'll stand. But if he sanctifies his field after the Jubilee, well, then what are we going to do? Discount it according to the principles we've already seen. The priest shall reckon unto him the kesef, the silver, according to the years that remain unto the next year of Jubilee, and an abatement shall be made from the valuation. So again, we discount it proportionally year by year over that time. Now, if he that sanctified the field would indeed redeem it, then he shall add the fifth part of the silver of the valuation unto it, and it shall be assured to him. So again, he doesn't just pay it back, he adds a fifth part. If he doesn't redeem the field, or if he sold the field to another man, it shall not be redeemed anymore. But the field, when it goes out unto the Jubilee, listen to this, shall be set apart wholly unto Yahuwah as a field devoted. This is the first time we see this word used, and it's interesting. This is another one of those words, like kadosh, that can be something either very good or very evil, or it depends on who it's devoted to, right? So the word here in Hebrew is ha-cherem, and it means devoted. And again, it can be devoted to Yah, or it could be devoted to something pagan. The possession, though, thereafter, is the Kohen's. And if he sanctifies it, sets it apart unto Yahuwah, a field which he's bought, which is not of the field of his possession, then the priest shall reckon unto him the worth of that valuation, his valuation, unto the year of Jubilee. And he gives that valuation in that day as a set apart thing unto Yahuwah. In the year of Yovel, the field shall return unto him of whom it was bought, even to him to whom possession of the land belongs. So it goes back. And all your valuations, it says here, shall be according to the shekel of the sanctuary, 20 gerahs to the shekel. Howbeit, the firstling among beasts, which is born as a firstling to Yahuwah, no man shall sanctify that. Whether it's ox or sheep, it is Yahuwah's. Now, if it's of an unclean beast, then he shall ransom it according to the valuation and add to it the fifth part, just like we've been seeing. Or if he is not redeemed, then it shall be sold according to that valuation, to your valuation, meaning the Kohen's. Notwithstanding, no devoted thing, no thing which is cherem, that a man may devote unto Yahuwah of all that he has, whether it's of man or beast, or of a field of his possession, shall be sold or redeemed. Everything which is devoted is most kadosh unto Yahuwah. None devoted, that may be devoted of men, or under the ban, is another way you'll see this rendered in some English renderings, shall be ransomed. He shall surely be put to death. Oh, see, devoted is a serious thing. And all the tithe of the land, whether we're talking about the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is Yahuwah's. It is set apart unto Yahuwah. And if a man would redeem aught, anything of his tithe, he shall add unto it the fifth part. And all of the tithe of the herd, of the flock, whatsoever passes under the rod, a tenth shall be set apart unto Yahuwah. He is not to inquire whether it's good or bad, nor shall he change it. If he changes it all, well then both it and that which it is changed for shall be kadosh. It shall not be redeemed. So lots of interesting stuff essentially about, and I guess as I'm thinking about this, maybe the closest that people would understand, although this is quite a bit of a different thing, but because we don't have too many things that are similar. This, certainly we have banks that take possession of people's stuff, but ultimately that's a bit different. Maybe it's a pawn shop where somebody puts something into the possession of a pawn shop and says, I'd like it back, and I'm going to have to redeem it. Okay, so you got to pay back the loan that the pawnbroker gave you and add something to it, add a fifth part to it. The additional element here is that there are some things you pawn them and they don't get redeemed. If they're devoted to Yahuwah, they stay devoted to Yahuwah. So, the last verse in the portion, the last verse in the book, as a matter of fact, says this, and it's kind of interesting. Let me summarize where we're at up until now. Once something is made kadosh, set apart wholly unto Yahuwah, it, they, we stay set apart. And then it says this, these are ha-mitzvot, the commandments, which Yahuwah commanded Moshe for the B'nai Israel, Behar Sinai, in Mount Sinai. Do they still apply? Well, I guess the answer is only if you want the blessings as opposed to the cursings. It's like saying, when Yeshua died on the cross, was the law done away with? If the law had been done away with, folks, everybody would have floated off into space. Have you ever thought about that? Law's done away with, no more law of gravity. Oops, what's keeping us held down here? Answer, he didn't change anything about his real law, the things that he has literally made the universe to be. And that's the key. That's an element that seems to have kind of escaped the intention of those who would like to say, oh, well, it's all done away with. The only real law that matters, I guess, is Big Brother's law. His law is forever, right? You better not break his laws about taxes or gun controls or, devoting your children to something that's anathema to him. We end a book that is probably one of the most, among the whole church, if you were to ask them, pick a book that you hate the most, I bet most of them would say Vayikra, Leviticus. That's the most done away with of all of them. And certainly there's a lot of stuff in here that we look at and we don't quite understand. But interestingly, there is a whole lot of stuff in here, too, that if we paid more attention to, we might be avoiding some of the curses that we ended up seeing and are now seeing, literally from coast to coast and around the world. And again, with that, the book ends, and I'll use the traditional ending because I like this word, chazak, right? Chazak means be strong and of good courage. And traditionally, when the book ends, people will say chazak, chazak, venit chazak, be strong and of good courage. Well, that's a great way to end.